The views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
Revolution comes with a price tag. You a slave to a flag in a country that clearly doesn't love you when they probably never have. Told you turn the other cheek, and they met it with a bat. Fucking protesting them sit-ins. Told you go fight in the war. Vietnam, you died, good riddance. The man of the house rule took you from your siblings. Turned around a pump crack right up and you did it. And they just turned all your leaders to martyrs. You was off in the war, now who was guarding your daughters? It was riots in the streets, killed Malcolm and Martin. Called the National Guard up because we ride with our guard up. And that was blood in your guard. The Second Amendment don't apply to you. Everything that they taught you was a lie to you. See, they scared of your skin and they dying to shoot. Take the American dream and then you die to pursue.
One day it'll all make sense. If it ain't about power, then it don't make sense. But none of that money matters when you live in madness. The one that you figure out that all you got is this. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger.
For those of you who good afternoon. You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Today's date is January 26, 2016. I've been off air for about a while. I've been off air for about a week. And so this is my first live broadcast in about a week. I didn't give any kind of notice, or I apologize for that. I didn't give any kind of notice. To be honest with you, I got just swamped with some things behind the scenes, and I had to take a break from the airways because I put a lot into my programs. I just don't come on the air and just run my mouth, and although it may seem like that for some people, but I like to actually do research and know about the things that I'm talking about, at least know something about it. If I don't know everything, you know, that just seems, you know, professional to me. If you're going to call yourself a talk radio host and talk about issues that you think are important and that people ought to know about, then at least you ought to know about what you're talking about. You should do research. And that kind of ties into a couple of topics I want to discuss today. But yeah, I do want to first apologize and say, you know, I'm going to try to be on air, but there's just so much going on that I cannot talk about really behind the scenes. And that has gotten a lot of my attention. So I'll try to be on air and go back to my regular schedule. But, you know, forgive me if I don't. Forgive me if I don't, but I'll try to make a great effort to come on Mondays, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays at 4 o'clock p.m. Now, before we get started, let me give out those phone numbers. The conference line number is 641-715-3660. That's 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549032-POUND. That's 549032-POUND. Anytime you would like to comment, hit star 6 and 1. That'll signal me. I'll bring you right on in. If you're somewhere else in the world, on the planet outside of the United States, or even if you're in the United States, as long as you got an internet connection, you can call into the program, make a free phone call using a web-based flash phone. It does require you have a pair of headsets, obviously. Okay, and then you can also give us a call on the studio line or via Skype. Our Skype handle is Black Talk Radio Network. The telephone number is 704-951-5030. Again, that's 704-951-5030. Skype been acting kind of funny lately, so if the voicemail picks up, you can either leave a voicemail when I see it, I'll play it on air, or you can hang up and try again. Skype just really acts funny sometimes, and I'll be glad when they get their web-based services up and running, which is in beta right now. Okay, so these are the topics that I want to talk about. I want to talk about reparations, and not really reparations, but I want to talk about slavery. And specifically, I want to talk about a white supremacist by the name of Abraham Lincoln. And what got me thinking about this or writing about it, because I've been in researching about it, is Ta-Nehisi Coates wrote a piece for The Atlantic, which is a white-owned paper that has been around since the 1850s is when they first started publication. So I'm talking about The Atlantic. It is not a publication that's owned by black people, independent black people. It's not independent black media is what I'm trying to say. All right, but he wrote a piece in there a few days ago. I would call it an attack piece on Senator Bernie Sanders, who's running against Hillary Clinton and Martin O'Malley, seeking the Democratic presidential nomination. And Bernie Sanders was asked a question, just like Hillary Clinton was asked a question about a month before, or whether or not he supports reparations. Ta-Nehisi Coates didn't like his answer, although I thought it was a very truthful answer and it was a realistic answer. I know it's not the answer that a lot of people want to hear and whatnot. And they, I guess, you know, want to be validated in their support for reparations by white people or something. You know, I don't need a white person's validation or saying they support something in order for me to work towards wherever it is I say is owed to me. What I do is I work until I get myself in a position of power, and then I demand it. Otherwise, you know, I don't be begging white people for nothing, man. Not even politicians. I do put demands on them, but the things that I put demands on these politicians about, there's widespread support for it. There is widespread support for the abolishment of slavery in this country. Some people call it prison reform, whatever they want to call it. But there is more support for the abolitionist movement, I would say, and it has a mass appeal, more so than reparations. But anyway, that's what got me thinking about it. Well, anyway, I pretty much held my tongue in terms of not doing anything on the radio or putting out any videos about what I thought about Mr. Coates. I shared my thoughts with a couple of people online, where I thought it was politically, it was politically pedestrian, just scratching the surface of politics and, you know, leaving out a whole lot of the process and to think it's simple as somebody saying whether or not they support reparation, which no candidate for U.S. president in the history of U.S. presidents have ever said they supported reparations, except for Abraham Lincoln, who Coates wrote about in another piece to back up his first piece. I do some research today. I did not know this, and I know a lot about Abraham Lincoln, but Abraham Lincoln supported reparations for the enslavers, for the white plantation owners who was enslaving Africans. He did support reparations for them. All right. Now, this guy by the name of, I forget the guy's name. I was just writing about him today. I could actually pull that up. No, I'm going to save it for an article that I'm working on to address this more. But Lincoln did publicly express support for reparations for the enslavers, just like, you know, Britain paid the people reparations because they lost their enslaved, you know, human beings and whatnot. They lost property. So we're going to pay you for the loss of your property and whatnot. Lincoln, he supported reparations for the white enslavers, all right, and anybody else that was enslaving people, all right. So this other politician said that Lincoln supported reparations for the actual victims, but I could find no mention of Lincoln ever publicly stating such a thing, that he supported reparations. And considering that it was the vice president, his name will come to me in a minute, but the vice president of the Confederacy, who said something about Lincoln paying the enslaved Africans reparations, that's what he was telling them, to make them fight even more against the Union. Oh, look at this man, he gonna give these niggas some money and whatnot. Oh no, we must fight to preserve white supremacy institution of slavery. And look, he talking about taking our property and not paying us for it, but paying them for it. But again, publicly, Abraham Lincoln actually did support reparations for the enslavers, not the victims, not the victims. But Ta-Nehisi Coates held Lincoln up as some kind of martyr for abolitionism, and that's nothing, that could be nothing further from the truth. That is an outright lie. And that's what I want to talk about. That's what I want to present to you, because it is always good to have correct information. And see, we be reading stuff in these on these white people's platform. Don't matter who they wrote it. It doesn't matter. All right. We want to read these stuff on these prestigious websites that's been around for 100, 200 years and whatnot. And we won't take it as gospel truth. We want to look at ABC, you know, white people's television. And just cause they say it, you know, whether it's a showcase black person news anchor like a Don Lemon or whoever they get, or whether it's a racist white person like Bill O'Reilly, it don't matter, man. You can't be looking to these people to be giving you the gospel truth on anything. You, in fact, you should always suspect that they lying to you, and further, and you need to do further research on whatever they telling you. By they telling you it's raining outside, you need to go to your front door, open up the door and check and see if it's raining, because they might be lying. I'm telling you, they might be lying. All right. So anyway, I don't know Coates personally. I know he got a college degree in all of that. I don't know if he got a PhD or, you know, any of those awards and whatnot. But either this man is ignorant about Abraham Lincoln and his opposition to abolition, or he's engaging in intellectual dishonesty to support his argument against Sanders, as if he has committed some kind of cardinal sin in politics by saying that he don't support reparations and giving you the truthful reasons on why he don't support it. The same reason all them other politicians don't support it, at least publicly. They don't support it, except for Charles Rangel. But Charles Rangel ain't worried about his voters. He's in a predominantly black district, and of course black, you can say you support reparation and black people gonna vote for you. Of course they are. And even if you don't, they still gonna vote for you, all right? As long as you black. I'm sorry, we do engage in a lot of identity politics, and it's not so much as the platform that these people are running on. Most of us do not engage in a serious manner in the people activity area of politics. And so, you know, identity politics is what they practice. Let me vote for this person because they black. Maybe they will, you know, obviously they live a life based on justice, and they trying to help people who need help the most. And a lot of times that ain't even the case, man, that they trying to help themselves, okay, in the system. That's what they trying to do. All right, but yeah, I think it's, I mean, that just really kind of ticked me off to see a white supremacist like Abraham Lincoln. Now, this dude was a confirmed white supremacist, all right, and he was against abolition. He was really against that. He could say privately all he wanted to about, I think slavery is wrong and blah, 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 but politically, he ain't do a thing to stop slavery that was in no form or fashion. Okay? None. Except in a way to save the Union. Yeah, he will enlist some black people. And I was reading that today. He enlisted black soldiers because they couldn't win without him. South was kicking their butts, man. They couldn't win without. And if your aim wasn't to end slavery, then why the heck should I risk my life as a black person out there to help you keep the Union intact when you keeping slavery intact? All right. And they needed them black troops. They needed that black man and woman power, whether it was from the free black people or whether it was from the enslaved Africans who had escaped and was in the north somewhere, you know, on the run. Running from slave catchers and whatnot, the slave patrollers and whatnot. So, I was reading that today, and that's the only reason he issued the Emancipation Proclamation. But I came across evidence that when people under his command, like maybe a colonel or a general or something down here in the South, I was reading specifically in South Carolina where this one Union general said everybody's free in Florida, South Carolina. And for some reason, he ain't mentioned North Carolina, but he said Virginia. And he was like, all of you enslaved Africans are now free. And we're abolishing slavery. Lincoln reversed that order. Lincoln said, look, you don't got the authority to be setting nobody free. So you need to go and straighten that back up. You know, you need to come out your mouth correctly. I'm the commander in chief, not you. You don't get to free nobody. He did that on two occasions, no, at least three occasions. So how in the heck is Ta-Nehisi Coates going to feature this man in this article and say and suggest to us that Lincoln lost his life because he was so radical in his convictions and moral convictions to end slavery, and that's why John Wilkes Booth shot him? Which that ain't why John Wilkes Booth shot him. I just came across more information today on why John Wilkes Booth really shot him. Because, again, I'm a victim just like everybody else. I'm a victim of a U.S. public school indoctrination, a miseducation, okay? I'm a victim, too. So a lot of stuff that I know now, you know, I did not know this in my 30s, I would say. Even in my 30s, I didn't really start, like, really reading, doing research in these particular historical areas until I was well into my 40s. And so I'm still uncovering stuff today. So, I mean, that just seems pretty suspect to me. When you're going to hold up a white supremacist, you're going to prop up this white supremacist who is responsible for the continuation of slavery to support your argument against Bernie Sanders and attack him because he wouldn't publicly say to somebody, you know, I support reparations. Again, man, there's a long process to getting reparations, and black people collectively have not done what they need to do politically to demand reparations. Because, see, you don't, or else, man, you don't beg these white people for nothing, man. You got to be coming from a position of power. That's how you deal with them. You don't go with, say, look, you did this and that to me 100 years ago or to my great, 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 great grandfather or grandmother, and then, you know, you're gonna say to that person's descendant, the descendant of the person, you know, of the enslaver, you're gonna say to them, no, man, you in a place of weakness as a black person in this system. You ain't even together, you haven't even mastered area number 6 in politics. So how you ain't in no place to demand nothing. So all we are doing collectively is begging. And I'm tired of begging. I refuse to beg. I'm not begging. I'm going to do what I need to do to position myself in a place of power. Then I'm demanding. I'm making demands. See, two totally different things. Begging and demanding. Right now, sadly, collectively, black people, we in that position of begging. We begging them. Because we haven't gotten ourselves together in all the areas we need to get ourselves together at in and master so that we can stop begging and start issuing demands from a place of power. Now, speaking of presidents and the executive branch, the other thing that I want to talk about, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, by the way. I'm only going to be on air for an hour so that I can get to work doing some other stuff. But if you have any questions or comments, any observations you would like to make, any counterpoints, any supporting points, would love to hear them. Because I am not the smartest person on the planet, but I do have, you know, pretty good reading comprehension. So I wouldn't say I'm the dumbest person either. But I'm still learning, and I need people to help me learn what I can't teach myself. All right, so the other thing I want to talk about, President Obama, by way of an executive order, is banning the use of solitary confinement in federal prisons against juveniles and as a punishment for low-level infractions. Now, while this is a welcome development, it falls way short of totally abolishing solitary confinement, which the president has acknowledged, because people have done scientific research that it has a permanent harmful psychological impact on human beings. And I imagine it has the same sort of impact on animals as well. When you put these animals in their cages and whatnot, and especially if they're by themselves, where people just walking by gawking at them all day, man, I bet you them animals are insane. I bet you circus animals are probably, you know, if you could detect mental illness in circus animals, I bet you circus animals are mentally ill out the yin yang, you know. And that is what happens to people when you put them in a solitary confinement that they've been doing for hundreds of years. This is all rooted in slavery. Had to separate the rebellious victim from, you know, the passive victims. The ones that was going to fight you, yeah, you can't allow them to be mixed in with these passive ones, because he might speak some words or she might speak some words that is going to encourage them to get some courage in their heart and rise up and kill the enslaver. All right. So, yeah, you know, that's where solitary confinement comes from. Got to separate the rebellious from the passive, or else that rebellious attitude may spread. So, you know, that's why you don't hear people talking from real places of power on your radio dial, called white people own it. They control it. All right. The white supremacists run that. All right. So anyway. It is. It's a welcome development, but it falls way short. And then I'm also looking at the timing, because, you know, you've had, 7 years going into your 8 years to make a major impact as the executive officer over the executive branch, just like you issuing this executive order now. You could issue an executive order and free every last single one of those federal prisoners who are in there for a nonviolent drug crime. So he gets no pats on the back. No kudos, no thumbs up and good job and all of that kind of garbage, because this ain't nothing but crumbs that he's giving to people that's putting demands on him. We've been making these demands. I'm talking about those who have been active. There are many different organizations and trying to abolish prison slavery, whether they recognize it as the continuation of slavery on this continent or not. They see what's wrong with prisons, and they've been trying to do something about it. Man, you got a whole bunch of people, whole lot of support, you know, multi-ethnic, multi-religious. You know, it goes across class lines. You got people that is been working and putting pressure on this system to stop mistreating people in prison. So, again, you know, this still falls way short. He ain't just up and do this because he's a good person and he feels bad for these people and whatnot. And no, the people are putting demands on the system. And so the people that's really in control, that's the bankers, that's the corporate 1%, you know, the wealthy people, the kings, the dukes, the duchesses, and the queens of England, and all of these people behind the scenes that's really running things because they got the money to fund campaigns. Yeah, they probably said, okay, Barack, we will allow you to do this. We'll allow you to do that. I mean, but if you believe that people have free will, he could do whatever the hell he want to. He ain't got to wait for people permission to do anything. Now, he might be putting his life on the line for standing up for justice, but anytime you stand up for justice, hell, that's a worthy time to be putting your life on the line. I wouldn't be putting my life on the line just to be called the first black president or some nonsense like that. But again, this man could free every last single person that's in a federal prison on some nonviolent drug crimes, victimless drug crimes right now. He can do that. As he's writing this and saying that, let me see, area code 980, you're on Black Talk Radio News. Who we got on the line? Give me just a second, because I am not hearing anything, and I think that perhaps I got the volume turned down, so let me turn the volume up.
Mr. White.
Okay, this is, all right, I got you. 980, who we got on the line?
Hey, Mr. White, this is Sean with the National Health Enrollment Center.
Mr. White, you had the wrong number. This is a radio station. You're calling in to the studio line of a Black Talk Radio Network.
Okay, what's the topic of the day?
Okay, well, you can tune in, but while we're talking about the vicious white supremacist by the name of Abraham Lincoln, who a writer in the Atlantic held up as a martyr of abolition, saying that Lincoln gave his life to free slaves and whatnot because he was so about abolishing slavery, and that's a lie.
What's your name, boss?
Okay, listen, you can tune in to the program, but this is what this line is for, okay?
Well, am I on the radio?
Yes, you are actually live on the radio right now. So.
Okay. Right. So definitely, I just want everybody to know this is the National Health.
Okay, I don't know who that was. The National Health. I think I've gotten some solicitation for somebody that's pushing something for the Obama administration. Anyway, let me get back to the program. All right. So anyway, last thing I said, that President Obama, by way of an executive order, is saying in federal prisons, which is totally in his power as the chief executive officer of the United States of America Incorporated, to ban the use of solitary confinement in federal prisons against juveniles. And my first thought was, okay, what the hell is juveniles doing in prison? Well, of course I know they sentence kids as adults and, you know, try them as adults. So that's why you got juveniles in adult prisons. And I'm not aware of the federal government running any jails. I could be wrong about that. They may have some detention facilities or whatnot, but I don't know if they run any jails. But I know a lot of juveniles end up in detention facilities, and I'm unaware of the federal government housing or running any juvenile detention facilities. Usually that's just corporations in the states. So I could be incorrect. Maybe some of these juveniles in some of these private prison corporations or detention facilities, maybe they are in there as federal prisoners. I could be wrong. I don't know. So that's possible. So those are the two things that I want to focus on. All right. So let's get to the factual information on Abraham Lincoln. All right, let me pull up this article in the Atlantic. It was published 2 days ago. 2 days ago. So he did a pretty quick follow-up piece. And I'm talking about Ta-Nehisi Coates when he attacked Bernie Sanders for saying that he basically saying Bernie Sanders isn't a radical because he doesn't support reparations. And reparations would be a tool to dismantle white supremacy or help us fight white supremacy. Now, why would a white supremacist give you the tools to end white supremacy? Come on, man. That's why I'm saying, what do you expect these people to say? Do you expect them to say yes? Because they're not going to say yes. All right? They're not going to say yes. This isn't Charlie Rango we're talking about. We're not talking about your local black representative and whatnot who've been talking about reparations for 30 years and you managed to get him elected or her elected to Congress. No, we're talking about a man who was elected from an all-white, virtually all-white state, Vermont. Okay? And so he is only going to get elected with the vote of a majority of white people. Okay? So what do you expect him to say? Yes, and then not get elected? And if he's serious about running for president, just like President Obama was serious when he was candidate Obama, when he was asked the question, he said no. They gonna tell you no, because ain't nobody gonna win no general election for president by supporting reparations for enslaved Africans. All right, they not going to do it, man. They just not. So, he came out with this article, and this is, I've linked to it. You can read it. It's buckets and buckets of words, man. And, you know, I'm trying to even teach myself When I'm writing articles, which I have been doing that since I've been absent from the airways, that I use as little words as possible. You know, 200, 300 words, that's enough. Get to the point, man. Don't be trying to confuse people. Don't be using big words. Don't be, you know, engaging in all this intellectual gymnastics. Just tell the people in plain, simple English what they need to hear. But this is the point that he tried to make, to say that Bernie Sanders ain't a radical. And I don't know. I mean, some of the things Bernie Sanders is proposing is radical. You know, hell, how many politicians out there talking about breaking up these big banks, which, by the way, are huge investors in 21st century slavery and human trafficking? How many? That's radical, man. Talking about free Medicaid for all. That's socialism, man. That's what they got in Cuba. You know, free health care as well as free education. You can go to Cuba and become a doctor and not be in all this debt. And man, that's radical in a capitalist system. That's radical. All right. So to say that those things, you know, oh, he isn't radical or he isn't proposing anything radical because he don't support reparations, then, you know, that's just crazy. But then when you say, or he said that it was divisive, and it is divisive. This was Sanders' answer. Sanders said that it's no support for Congress for it. It's nil, which means zero, nothing. It's nothing there. Nobody's going to vote to pass it through. So he said that first. Then he said it's divisive, all right, or divisive, whatever your pronunciation of the word is, however you pronounce it. Isn't that a truthful statement? Do everybody in this country support reparations? Hell, all black people don't even support reparations. So, simply saying that it's divisive, I mean, that's just simply stating the damn obvious. That's just telling the truth. Now, this is why I'm starting to look at him as suspect, because it seemed to me like he is doing this to try to help Hillary Clinton get in, which I'm would not be surprised that he's gotten an assignment from the Atlantic, the good white people over there at the Atlantic that was good enough to give this black person a job and prominently feature them, you know, on the front page with words and whatnot. And man, I wouldn't doubt if they put him on assignment to write a piece that would, how would they say that? We want you to write a piece on Bernie Sanders so that black people won't vote for Bernie Sanders and push them towards Hillary Clinton. Because that's basically how his piece is reading. You know, but this is what he said. So divisive was Abraham Lincoln's embrace of abolition that it got him shot in the head. That is factually incorrect. I mean, I would think a high school student would know that Lincoln, when he was elected, never said that he was about ending slavery. He never said publicly. He did not run publicly as an abolitionist. This is like recorded history, dude. And I know they lie a lot in their history books, but, you know, these are his own words and whatnot. This man, all throughout the Civil War, said that my main goal is to keep white people together. And of course, he means the Union. I mean to keep this powerful union of white people together. And if I can do that and keep and let slavery remain intact, then I'll do that. If I can end it all, end slavery and the Union still stay intact, then I'll do that too. So he wasn't trying to be divisive. I mean, he wasn't trying to divide white. White people were divided. The country was divided over the issue of slavery during their time. You had white people, black people, other people who were against slavery and were abolitionists. And then you had other white people who didn't care or, you know, they was profiting from slavery. So they was like, dang, why would I be against it? And when Lincoln didn't care, but the country was divided already. And the only way that he was able to keep the Union together was with the help of black people. And so black people at that time, they wasn't going to join no war to keep no union together. They would join a war to end slavery, and so they did. And that is the only reason he issued the Emancipation Proclamation when he did. And then when he issued that, he said that this is only for the states that are in rebellion, that are part of the Confederacy. But if they decide to come back, I was just reading this in a letter he wrote. If they came back in today, they would still be able to keep their slaves. Let me read to you what this man wrote. Damn. To say that this man got shot over him standing up for abolitionism is just utter BS, man. It's just utter BS, man. It's either one of the biggest intellectual blunders I have ever seen from a black person talking about racism or white supremacy or slavery. All right, or he's practicing deception, and he knows this. This is a letter that Abraham Lincoln on December the 22nd in 1860. This is 1860, right? Give me just a moment. This is a letter that he had wrote to his good friend, Mr. Stevens, A.H. Stevens. What is this guy's name? I got his name because this is part. Alexander H. Stevens, a congressman from Georgia, who was Lincoln's good friend in when Lincoln was in Congress. Because remember, he got elected as a congressman from Illinois before he became president. And this was his good Southern friend, you know, Alexander H. Stevens, who supported slavery. He describes him as his friend and whatnot. And this guy actually ended up, Alexander, who he's writing this letter to, ended up becoming a vice president of the Confederacy. Now, this letter is dated December the 22nd, 1860, and I write that it's direct evidence that Lincoln was not about abolition. It says, for your own eye only. This is what he tell. He was like, this is for your own eye. This isn't for public. We're not going to talk about this in the public because I don't want them abolitionists to know that I ain't really an abolitionist. I just tell them people what they want to hear so that I can be nominated and whatnot. And now, you know, be president and whatnot. So this is for your own eyes only. Don't be telling other people this. Don't release it to the newspaper. Honorable A.H. Stevens, my dear sir, your obliging answer to my short note is just received, and for which please accept my thanks. I fully appreciate the present peril the country is in and the weight of the responsibility on me. Do the people of the South really entertain fears that a Republican administration would directly or indirectly interfere with their slaves or with them about their slaves? If they do, I wish to assure you, as once a friend and still, I hope, not an enemy, that there is no cause for such fears. The South would be in no more danger in this respect than it was in the days of Washington. I suppose, however, this does not meet the case. You think slavery is right and ought to be extended, while we think it is wrong and ought to be restricted. That, I suppose, is the rub. It certainly is the only substantial difference between us. Yours very truly, A. Lincoln. Now let me read that last line. And when he talking about we, he talking about the abolitionists. The Republican Party was started as an abolitionist party. Frederick Douglass, the black abolitionist, Frederick Douglass, formerly enslaved African, great orator and forever great abolitionist, you know, he talked about this a lot. He talked about this. Give me just a moment. All right. He says, yeah, so we're talking, that's who he's talking about, the abolitionist. He secretly, I believe, was not an abolitionist. He was just telling these people what they wanted to hear. Because the abolitionists wanted the total abolition of slavery throughout the United States. But Blinken felt that he would only go as far as to say it would be restricted, meaning that they wouldn't allow the new states or the new territories that they was conquering, the new land they was conquering while they was slaughtering indigenous folks, whether they be indigenous African Indians or whatever you want to call them, American Indians. They were taking Indian land and whatnot and turning them into states. And then they were saying during Lincoln's time, the debate was, do we allow them to practice slavery? Of course, the abolitionists didn't want slavery to extend to these new territories, but they was also about abolishing it in the South. Lincoln politically was forced into the position that it should be restricted, meaning it shouldn't go to the territory. He had to be that way because the Republican Party was supported by abolitionists. And so, you know, he didn't want to let them know that he wasn't really in his heart. What didn't care either way about these dingone niggas, because he was a white supremacist. He was a white supremacist. He said publicly that white people are superior to black people. That's what the man said. So he's a white supremacist. So considering that Ta-Nehisi Coates came to, I guess, national prominence through Hidden Colors and talking about white supremacy, how in the heck is you gonna use a white supremacist, hold him up like he did so much for black people, that he was so radical and wanting to abolish slavery that he took a bullet for black people? That's a doggone bald-faced freaking lie, and I don't care who tell it. Are you gonna tell me this college-educated black man is this freaking ignorant? All right, that he has not done any research and any studying outside of what white people taught him through their textbooks? Has he not? Because I don't see how you can come out and hold Abraham Lincoln up as an example of someone who was so radical and didn't care about being divisive that he got shot over it. Man, that is some of the most intellectual, either intellectual laziness, and he did no research and has done no reading on who Lincoln really was, and he's just believing what he read in the high school textbook or what they said about him in college or what how Steven Spielberg portrayed him in the movies. Has he not done his own research? And I mean, even before I read this today, just days ago or over the past couple of days, I've been sharing a picture of Lincoln getting shot in the head by John Wilkes Booth, and I've been calling it poetic justice. Because Lincoln betrayed every single Union soldier, be they black or white, that joined the war, not to keep the Union together, not to keep white folks together and keep their government running. No. They joined it to end slavery. He betrayed every last single one of them as commander-in-chief. And that sort of betrayal, you should get shot for that. You should be executed. That treason is an executable offense. And it just seemed poetic justice, like the universe was reaching out and saying, damn, you one of the most vilest, evilest, diabolical creatures on the face of the planet. And cause I got a sense of irony, I'ma send one of these racist white supremacists to kill you. And that's gonna be how how justice is meted out for your betrayal. Lincoln deserved to get shot in the freaking head. He deserved to have his brains blown the freak out his head because he was a white supremacist who supported slavery. I mean, what else we gonna call it? If you saying that, you telling your friend who you know is another white supremacist enslaver, you writing him a secret letter and you telling him, please tell everybody that, except for, you know, don't tell the news and the news because I don't need this getting out. But please let them know I have no intention of freeing no slaves or interfering with you and how you do business with your slaves. And the only reason John Wilkes Booth shot this dude is because, again, black people were dealing from a position of power immediately following the Civil War. They couldn't win it without black people. Whether they was free black people or enslaved Africans, without us, they would not have won. The North wouldn't have won the Civil War. Then you got all these military trained, armed black soldiers. You dealing from a position of power at that point in time. Okay? And so they were saying, you know what? We just whooped these crackers in the South behind. We just, you know, put it all on the line. We're not going to accept second class citizenship. We want the right to vote. And they put that pressure on Lincoln. And he knew he had to have them. And he gave a speech talking about voting rights for black people. For black men specifically, not black women. Because he was also a misogynist. But that when he gave that speech about voting rights for black people, not because he was a generous white man or you know, he was a good person or anything like that. No, because politically at that time and militarily, we could say, at that time, black people weren't dealing in a position of weakness. You just helped these people win the war. And they know it. And we know it. And this is what we want. These are our demands. And so he was going to have to cave to those demands. And John Wilkes Booth heard him give that speech. And John Wilkes Booth himself said that's why he wanted to kill him. Not because the South lost the war. Not because the slaves was freed, because they was not freed. Then we can talk about the 13th Amendment and the exception clause in the 13th Amendment that says slavery and involuntary servitude shall be abolished except as punishment for crime whereby a person has been duly convicted by a jury of their peers. And we know back then, if you ain't, or as a black person, ain't even got the right to vote, you definitely ain't got the right to sit on no jury. So you definitely ain't being sentenced to prison by a jury of your peers. And Lincoln knew this. He was a lawyer. He was known for his skillful being a skillful attorney. He was known for this. And he knew exactly what that exception clause meant. That they were still going to get to practice slavery. The South was still, not only the South, but the new territories as well as the North. Y'all going to get to practice slavery. Yeah, we're going to let them go for a little bit. But then all y'all got to do is pass them laws and convict them of crimes. And damn it, we can put them right back into slavery. I'm waiting for that secret letter to turn up. But here we have a letter from the man at the beginning of his presidency telling this cracker that tell them other crackers down there that I ain't about abolition. That these rumors that they're hearing, yes, I know that the Republican Party was started by, you know, abolitionists. I know this nigga over here, this up-titty nigga named Frederick Douglass had a lot to do with me even getting a nomination, and let alone, you know, starting a party and whatnot. And I had to tell them some stuff in order for them to nominate me. I had to privately tell them I think slavery was evil. Because you ain't going to tell me that he telling these people this privately, and that's really what's in his heart. But then he, during the war, when you got some generals setting some Africans free, he going to tell them, you wrong. You don't have the authority to do that, and you ain't setting nobody free. You ain't abolishing nothing in South Carolina, Florida, and whatever the other state was that they talked about. Let me read some of these letters. If I need to go over an hour, I go over an hour because I do get going, and I tell you. Let me share. This is going to be in the article I'm going to publish later today. Okay, that's the source for the Lincoln letter. Came from teachingamericanhistory.org. It's where you'll find that letter I just read to you. Lincoln sent to his white supremacist friend to tell him to tell them other white supremacists and slavers they have nothing to fear. Man, and we got a black person holding them up as a martyr for abolitionism. Come on now. At the beginning of the war, this information comes to you. Let me tell you my source. I think a black person wrote this book, Lincoln and Black Freedom, A Study in Presidential Leadership. It was published by the University of South Carolina Press. By the author's name is LaWanda Cox. It could be a white person. I don't know. But a female wrote it. The book was published in 1981. I was still in high school, I think. Yeah, I was in high school. Might have been junior high in 1980. I don't know. Anyway, this is what she wrote. At the beginning of the war, Lincoln prohibited his generals from freeing slaves, even in captured territories. On August the 30th of 1861, now again, what was the date of that letter? What was that date of the letter he sent to that white supremacist congressman out of Georgia? In 1860. So this is what he was doing in 1861. On August 30 of 1861, Major General John C. Fremont, the commander of the Union Army in St. Louis, proclaimed that all slaves owned by Confederates in Missouri were free. Lincoln opposed allowing military leaders to take executive actions that were not authorized by the government and realized that such actions could induce slave owners in border states to oppose the Union or even start supporting the enemy. Lincoln demanded Fremont modify his order and free only slaves owned by Missourians working for the South. When Fremont refused, he was replaced by the conservative General Henry Wager Halleck. See there, told y'all, damn, the Civil War was not the war. They didn't go into that war. Lincoln didn't declare war on them. First of all, it was the South that broke away and declared war on the North. But he had no intention of ending slavery. He done told this cracker in from Georgia that tell these other crackers down there that I ain't finna end slavery. Just tell them. Just tell them, man. But don't give this to the press. Just tell them. And so in order to get the help of black people and some white people and to be able to use the enslaved Africans, you know, he issued the Emancipation Proclamation again, which was again not freeing everybody, only those in the states that were in rebellion, that was part of the Confederacy or that were helping the Confederacy. But if you was a good Union boy, if you, you know, maintain your allegiance to the United States government, I don't care how what you do to them beasts of burden. They inferior to white people anyway, so, you know, hell, who am I to tell a white man what he should do to a nigger? People want to act like Lincoln was this moral individual who was so enlightened and radical that he got shot standing up for niggers. Enslaved niggers at that. I hate ignorance. If I sound like I'm that this is personal to me, no, it's not personal. This is business. This is professional. I just get pissed off at lies, man. And especially when our own people be repeating our lies. But hell, I don't know. I shouldn't even say our own people, cause I don't know who some of these people are, whose team they playing for. I really don't. So let me go on. This again was repeated another year later in 1862, in case there was any doubt that Lincoln was not an abolitionist. Here's another incident that happened 2 years after he sent that white supremacist cracker that letter. Says when General David Hunter began enlisting black soldiers in the occupied district under his control, soon afterwards, Hunter issued a statement that all slaves owned by Confederates in Georgia, Florida, and South Carolina was free. Now, check this out. This I didn't pick up on this, but I'm picking it up now. The first time I read this, I didn't pick up on it. All right. Now, he told that other one that it would only apply to those in Missouri that owned, that was enslaving people that was working for the Confederacy. All right. So now here he is going here. You got this guy Hunter. So General David Hunter knows he needs black soldiers and whatnot. And so he, in this occupied district under his control, as it states, issued a statement that all slaves owned by Confederates in Georgia, Florida, and South Carolina was free. Despite the pleas of now Lincoln shouldn't have a problem with that, right? Because he had just told Fremont, you know, when he did something similar, no, you just can't let all of them go. Only the ones that is owned by those that's working against the Union. If they not working against the Union, leave them and they slaves alone. All right. So this dude right here, he probably knows that he knows this is happening. This other general lost his post because he wouldn't go along with it, and he was an actual abolitionist. Now, so Hunter knows this has happened, so he say, okay, only the slaves owned by Confederates in Georgia, Florida, and South Carolina, y'all free. All right. Now, it goes on to read, despite the pleas of Treasury Secretary Salmon P. Chase, Lincoln ordered Hunter to disband the Black First South Carolina Regiment and to retract his proclamation. At all times, Lincoln insisted he controlled the issue. Only he had the war powers. That should clear up all doubt right there. He even contradicted himself in what he told the other general. What's the other general? Fremont? Major General John C. Fremont, who obviously had to be an abolitionist to the core. And he was like, I'm setting all you people free in Missouri and whatnot. Slavery is evil. I joined this war to abolish it, so we abolishing it. Y'all free. Lincoln say, oh, no, you can't do it. Only the ones we will free are the ones, if their masters, if their evil enslavers are working against the Union and they supporting the Confederacy. So then, here we come to General David Hunter. Okay, only the enslaved Africans owned by those working for the Confederacy will be free. And then here come Lincoln. Oh, no, you're going to retract that. I'm the only one that got that kind of power. See how they done lied to us all throughout history, not only through the school textbooks, but through movies and television and tell live visions. It's how, what some people call it. See what I'm saying? There is no excuse for intellectual laziness, and it is no excuse for intellectual dishonesty. Now, I don't know which one it is that Ta-Nehisi Coates is engaging in, but he needs to issue a retraction on what he wrote about Lincoln being so divisive with Abraham Lincoln's embrace of abolition that it got him shot in the head. Abraham Lincoln ain't died for no niggas, okay? Let's stop telling that lie over and over. My God, I even knew when I was a child and I went, you know, in the neighborhood I lived in Detroit, and I went in this older black woman's house that lived across the street. I think she wanted me to go to the store or something. I was 11 years old, and I remember asking myself, why she got that white man on her wall? And we ain't talking about Jesus. It was Lincoln. She had Lincoln. She had a picture of not Robert F. Kennedy. What's the Kennedy that got assassinated? Jack Kennedy. John Fitzgerald Kennedy. She had his picture, and she had Martin Luther King Jr.'s picture. I don't know why. And I remember thinking to myself then, why this woman got these white men on her freaking wall like that? You know, who are these white men? And I would think I had to be about 10 or 11 at the time. And so, you know, it's later that I look back and I see that among older people. Is that, you know, they think that John F. Fitzgerald was some anti-racist and whatnot. No, when black people started organizing and putting themselves in a position of power and started uniting, they forced Kennedy and then later Johnson to pass, though. These were not good white men who passed anything. They were demands put on them. Wasn't no begging. Martin Luther King was not begging. He was coming from a position of power. He forced them things. And I think later Coates even gives credit to Lyndon B. Johnson, saying, oh, Johnson did this even though it was divisive. Look, man, ain't nobody passing reparations, okay? Because black people ain't in a position of power to demand reparations. So you left with your hat in your hand begging these people. I mean, why are you even asking them for reparations? No, the way the game is played is that you put yourself in a position of political power like them Jews have done, like the Hispanics are doing, and like black people are trying to do through 1 million black conscious voters and contributors. Then once you get yourself in a position of power, when you are collectively pooling your resources, and then you can fund people to run for Congress, to run for president, and whatnot, then that's when you in a position to demand they pay reparations. Otherwise, you just begging, and begging ain't a good look. But to give these white men some sort of credit to make a point that is nonsense, that shouldn't even, I mean, what is that doing for black people? What would it do for black people if Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama said, I support reparations? Do you think it's going to get passed tomorrow? What difference is it going to make? Is you going to be any more closer to getting a reparations check? We ain't even figured out who all is owed reparations. But I would tell you every black person in America is owed reparations, not for some slavery past, but for some slavery present, and for some institutional racism from barring our parents and our grandparents from being able to participate as citizens and get all the benefits that citizens enjoy. You excluding them from participating in Social Security, from participating in the GI Bill, from getting land that you didn't stole from the Indians, and you giving it to all these white peasants from Europe, and you excluded them for that. Man, they owe us reparations, not right now for what they doing now, not for what was done in the past. But here's my thing. Let's end slavery first. Let's put ourselves in a position of power to end slavery. Because I don't even think Ta-Nehisi Coates, I've never heard this dude acknowledge that slavery still exists, that it's not mass incarceration. It's just a continuation of slavery, which is codified in their constitution, the 13th Amendment. Don't you see these states with contracts with private? We want to talk about abolition. Now, look, I ain't on here to carry no water for Bernie Sanders, but I do believe in facts, putting out facts. And I do support legislation this man is about. Again, I support the breakup of big banks. Why? Because Bank of America, Wachovia, I can say for certain both of those banks invest in the private prison corporations. They practicing slavery just like they would have been doing, like Wells Fargo, who I know was in existence pre-1865 slavery and was practicing slavery back then. They practicing slavery now with their investments in the prison. Don't you know? Dang, man. We want to act like slavery. What is it? We don't want to admit that we believed a bunch of lies. Is that what it is? Or is it that programming is just so embedded in our minds that we just cannot come to the realization that they never stopped practicing slavery? Never, man. Never. At no point. I'm sorry. Whoever's holding on the line, I don't know how long you've been holding on, so I want to apologize. But I just looked at the board, and I see that you have a question or a comment, 973, that you would like to make.
First, can you hear me, Scotty?
Yes, I can. How are you? Good to hear from you.
Good evening, Mr. Reed. The question I had for you was that are you still on at 4 o'clock every day? Because I've been, I automatically just dial your number and then I get the moderator will be coming. So what is your schedule for 4 o'clock?
My schedule, I'm sorry. I apologize at the beginning of the program. Let me apologize again. Lots of things been going on behind the scenes and I took about a week off. And with no announcement, I actually was thinking about suspending the program and just doing pre-recorded content, you know, conducting interviews and giving my reports, which I have been doing those. But I've heard from a number of people and they want me back on the airwaves. So I'm back to my regular schedule Monday, Tuesday, Thursday and Friday since I was able to take care of some of the things behind the scene that was requiring my time. So I apologize for not letting anyone know what was really going on.
That's okay, sir. I'm glad you're back on the air. I look for my daily dose. first of all, I just want to say I was listening to you earlier in the program talking about President Obama. I'm happy that he did something, Mr. Reed. I know, you know, we want him to be 100%, but that's a start. I mean, you know, as you say, he is the CEO of America here, and at least we got that out of him. Yes, he could have done it earlier, but, you know, here I'm in the New Jersey, New York area, and there's been so many deaths over in Rikers Island with respect to those guys who were just having marijuana charges, being locked up in solitary confinement. So I'm a little bit happy. I'm very happy to hear it. I know it's not a lot, but every bit counts.
And you're right to feel that way. And I said that, but I got to point out, though, that there are a whole lot more people suffering that he could have just made this. He could have just been solitary confinement for federal prisons. And I don't know if they operate jails. He could have banned it, period. Because this research that he's citing isn't juvenile specific. That psychological damage, these studies were done on adults. So in the international community views solitary confinement as torture. So yes, I'm happy. I'm happy. I should say, I don't know if happy is a good word to use. So I will say that I will take that. I will take whatever I can get, every little measly morsel or crumb or whatever, but I'm going to keep pushing for more. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly, sir. Exactly. It's just like with life, we keep pushing, we keep making, we take one day at a time. So, like I said, with certain situations here in New York, New Jersey, with a situation where this guy, when he did finally come out, he committed suicide.
Right.
And they locked him up for such a minor offense. And he stayed in jail for like 2 years. He was just
Khalid
Browder, the same person.
Mm-hmm.
You heard it. You talked about the case on the air. Also, I know you were talking about reparations. There's somebody who I probably would love for you to. I wish you can get him on your program. His name is Dr. Ron Daniels. I don't know if you've heard of him. Maybe I'm going to.
I think I have. If he just did an interview with a public radio station critiquing Ta-Nehisi Coates' piece, if that's the same, is it a black male?
Yeah, he's a black male. His name is Dr. Ron Daniels. It's called the Institute of the Black World here in New York. He's part of, he does a program. I'm not going to mention, I don't think I can do that on your program.
Sure, if it's black owned.
Because I know some programs, they don't want you to mention other programs, sir. I'm
okay.
Just trying to be respectful they don't want to compete or something like that. I know you're not like that, Mr. Reed, but I just want to make sure that I'm dying my eyes, crossing my T's. But he works out of York College, and his name is Dr. Ron Daniels. It's called IBW21.org. If you can go there, there's a lot of information. Every year, sir, they give a whole reparations summit. And let me tell you, Mr. Reed, is extremely intense. They have people from all over the world talking about reparations.
Oh, yes. I'm tuned into that movement, ma'am. I've seen the lectures. They just had a big thing in the Caribbean. Even Farrakhan was there. Charlie Rangel was there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I'm definitely in tune with that movement. Don't let me give the impression that reparations isn't old, because it is old. I support reparations, but I'm just saying is that what my point is we are begging right now. When you in a position a weakness, you beg. Whenever you, or you begging, you can call it asking or whatnot. But when you in a position of power, you make demands. And politically, in people activity area number 6, as Nee Fuller lays out, in the 9 areas, black people are not together politically, which is the only way a reparations bill is going to get passed for us to be making that demand. And then that is something that you do behind the scenes, like Charlie Rangel is working behind the scenes. It's just, it, I mean, do you, let me ask you this. If Barack Obama in 2007 had came out saying, you know what, I think black people in this country should be paid reparations because this country was built on their ancestors black, their stolen labor and this and that. Now, do you think this guy would have actually became president?
No. No, sir, I don't think he, I can, I know, Mr. Reed, I understand where you're coming from with respect to that. There's certain things you say and certain things you don't say because of the general population and what they agree. And I agree. I think they should actually pose that same question to, Hillary, actually.
It was already posed to her.
It was already posed. I got to look online and see what
she said. The
but no,
same
I definitely
thing.
Understand where you're coming from with respect to that. I was just thinking. I said I was wondering what your take on for reparations because I've never really heard you go far in depth. And also, I really appreciate you giving a great analysis of Mr. Lincoln and what he is. A lot of stuff you said that I didn't know about. So I really appreciate that. So I'm glad you're back on the air. I was looking online. Are you still doing the Sunday program? You say it was on hiatus or
something
like that?
Now Political Prisoner Radio is on hiatus cause I just got too much of a workload on me. One of the co-producers of that program, she's been sick for a while, so I'm not talking about Sister Marpessa. She has been physically unable to work behind the scenes to line up guest speakers and you know, the things that go into creating a program. The other co-producer is going through some personal hardship behind the scenes. So it was just me, you know, and I don't like doing something, just throwing something together last minute and then going on the airway. So I did put out a request for volunteers, if people who are familiar with advocates in the political prisoner advocacy community, and you would like to volunteer just for, you know, just scheduling guests and reaching out to people to come on and talk about either individual political prisoners or political prisoners in the U.S. in general, that I certainly could use to help. But until I get that help, and the other co-producer situation improves, then it's going to have to be on hiatus. But I still will.
Do you mind if it's a male, sir? Because I know a brother who's been in the political.
No, they will be working from behind the scenes. they will be working from behind the scenes.
Exactly.
Yeah. Gender don't matter. I was saying their gender doesn't matter to me.
Okay, because I know there was a woman working for you, and I remember I talked about females being on shows. But yeah, I will submit the information to you via email about him. I'm gonna talk to him about it and get in contact with you because I think he would love to help with that show. He's always talking about political prison. I think that's his life really, and he's been on a show of the brother's not up there anymore, but brother. Oh my God, he did the show a while ago. I can't think of his name. It's off the top of my head. But I will write that to you in email, Mr. Reed. I don't want to take any more of your time.
Okay,
I do appreciate
do that.
Taking my call.
I do want to let you know.
You, sir.
I do want to let you know that there is a new black woman's voice on Sundays coming on at 12:30 p.m. Shifting Paradigms with Sister Zion. That's a new show. She's done about 3 of them now, but every Sunday at 12:30 p.m. Eastern and to 2:30 p.m. Eastern, and her podcasts are on the website for that new program.
Okay, great. I'm going to definitely catch that time. Okay, Mr. Reed,
I
will continue talking with you and emailing you, sir.
All right. You have a good day.
You too, sir. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Q&A queue is cleared.
See, I said I was going to do an hour, but I get to talking, man, because, I mean, sometimes, man, you just can't. You have to break stuff down and you have to provide more background. And I just have to be very thorough. And that's why, you know, it took me all of those words, and I was like talking about buckets of words, but it took me, because, you know, a lot of people haven't heard this information, man. Man, thank the creator for the internet, all right? Because without the internet, man, I'll tell you, there's a whole lot of information that I still would not be aware of, or I wouldn't, and a lot of knowledge that I wouldn't possess if not for the internet. And it's a lot of stuff I'm still uncovering because of the internet. I'm not going to go to my local library and find any letters that Abraham Lincoln wrote to his white supremacist buddy in Georgia. No, I ain't going to find out that information down there. I might find a book that's saying how he told these two generals 2 years apart. No, no, no. We ain't about abolishing slavery. Only if the slave owner is supporting the Confederacy, then you can liberate those enslaved Africans. But then again, he totally contradicted himself 2 years later when the other general told black people, you know, that's enslaved in those Confederate states that they were free. Oh, he was like, no, you don't get to do that, and you need to retract that statement you didn't put out publicly, and you need to get rid of them nigger soldiers. See, he ain't even want black people to have guns and whatnot. He got pushed into that, y'all. He got pushed into it. Frederick Douglass and other black abolitionists and white abolitionists were constantly putting pressure on Lincoln. You need to authorize black troops, man. Or the Union, you know, you ain't no way out of it. So that's why it's also incorrect to be crediting this white bastard for freeing us, for freeing anyone. I shouldn't say us, because to my knowledge, none of my ancestors have been enslaved, you know, but I don't know everything, and I'm still researching, but freed people who were enslaved. So, I mean, that's just, man. Now, I want to give some thoughts on President Obama's executive order. Again, yes, I want this, because somebody, hopefully, will be helped. That's just one less somebody that'll be subjected to the torture of solitary confinement. Yes, I'm for this executive order from the executive officer of the executive branch. Now, for those that don't know, he issued an executive order directing the Bureau of Prisons, federal prisons, to stop using solitary confinement against juveniles. And I don't think any juvenile should even be in a federal prison. He has said to stop putting people, and I imagine he's talking about regardless of their age, putting people in solitary confinement as punishment over some minor stuff. But I'm telling you, the international community looks at solitary confinement as torture. So I'm like, man, you could have just as easily issued an executive order and just totally banned solitary confinement, period. I'm more interested to know why he stopped short. Did he get some pushback from behind the scenes and say, now we're willing to go as far as not doing it to juveniles, but we can't do it for all these people because, you know, we got to let these guards have their fun, and they get fun out of torturing people and putting them in solitary confinement and picking at them and all kind of, man, there's some sick people, man. It's guards, man, the things they do to people behind these bars. So I don't know. Maybe he got some pushback from the prison union, the prison guard union, you know, because apparently, you know, everybody want to dismantle unions except for the police unions and the prison unions because they always get exempted. So I don't know what the pushback was behind the scenes. But I say this falls way short. Am I glad that one less child will be tortured by these people? Yes, I am, but I am by no means satisfied with this. He gets no kudos, he gets no pats on the back, because you acknowledging that this is torture, he doesn't exactly call it torture, but when you acknowledge that the research shows that irreparable damage, psychological damage is done to people in solitary confinement, and you know it's wrong, and you're saying it's wrong, and you even mention that you got people that's been on political prisoner radio. We have told you about political prisoners that have been held in solitary confinement for over 40 years. Now, unless they're in federal prisons, this will not apply to them. This will apply to somebody, even though he shouldn't be in federal custody, but Imam Jamil Alameen, formerly known as H-Rap Brown. They got him in federal custody, but he should be in state custody. But see, they don't pay attention to laws and regulations. They do what the hell they want to when it comes to black people especially. And even white people who dare take up arms against the system. Shout out to the United Freedom Front. But yeah, man, this just stops way short. It's not because, man, they're saying up to 10,000 federal prisoners could be held in solitary confinement at any time. 10,000. And again, what is juveniles doing in prisons? Now, this is what I don't know. Y'all do know that the Bureau of Prisons, the federal government, the executive branch does contract with private prisons. Does this extend rules to the GEO group? Does this also apply to the Correction Corporation of America? Does this apply to MTC? To any private prison or jail holding federal prisoners? Do these rules apply to them as well? Because I'm not going to make the assumption that it does. Some people might say, well, they're getting federal dollars, they're on a federal contract, so they have to do this, they have to do that. No, they don't. If it's not specifically stated, no, they don't. And so knowing that the federal government is housing hundreds of thousands of people through private prisons, then no. There was one point that I forgot to make, and I'm going to leave this reparations thing alone and abolitionist thing alone. Again, I find it awful suspect that the Atlantic, and I'll do some more research, but Ta-Nehisi Coates doesn't mention in either of his articles, we won't talk about slavery, and we want to talk about in this latest piece what a great abolitionist Abraham Lincoln was, a man who wasn't afraid to die for the cause of setting the slaves free, which is totally utter BS. But since we won't talk about those things, I find it quite suspect that it wasn't mentioned that Bernie Sanders, along with this Hispanic representative out of Arizona, had introduced a bill called the Justice Is Not For Sale Act, which would abolish private prisons and jails in the United States, meaning they would be outlawed, illegal, and that's your primary source of the people who are funding the politicians who are putting all our people in prison. How do you talk about abolition and reparations, but don't mention that at least he's introduced this bill to abolish private prisons and jails? Because that is an abolitionist bill. How do you not mention that? And again, I don't know if it's ignorance. I don't know if it's intellectual dishonesty. And he actually knows these things to be true. But how do you paint Abraham Lincoln as an abolitionist in your piece and never even mention that perhaps the first bill in over 100 and something years to abolish some aspect of slavery has been introduced? You don't mention that. That's why I suspect, man. Again, I'm gonna go ahead and I'm gonna say I'm a compromise. I'm willing to compromise with you. I'm gonna say white people to blame for this article. I'm gonna say that white people to blame for these white lies coming out of this black man's pen. Because white people are on the platform, white people, all right, pay his salary, white people edit his articles, and so, yeah, white people to blame for Tariq I mean, why do I keep saying Tariq Nasheed? For Ta-Nehisi Coates advancing these great white lies about the great deceiver Abraham Lincoln. Yeah, I'm blame the Atlantic for that, because they probably want Hillary Clinton behind in there, since she without a doubt supports the oppression and enslavement of black people in this country. But again, getting back to this executive order. Yes. Thank you. I'll say thank you, Mr. Obama. Thank you, Chief Executive Officer, for putting out this executive order. I think you could do more, sir. I think that you could make this a permanent ban, or ban it for everybody, since it is torture, and you know it's torture, and you know it causes irreparable harm. Perhaps, maybe they're going to have to put their heads together and come up with other ways to correct the behavior of whatever prisoner because of whatever he's doing without using solitary confinement, okay, without torturing people, all right? So y'all need to work on that. Why don't you convene a think tank or something, and y'all put y'all heads together on how y'all can address people breaking rules without, you know, punishing them with torture. So again, thank you for saying it's wrong to torture kids and to just torture people for just little minor infractions. But again, sir, I would submit to you that torture is evil for whatever reason. I don't see anywhere in the Constitution where it justifies torture, unless we're talking about the 13th Amendment. And these people are, in fact, slaves, and they have no rights, not even human rights, because they're not human. So, yeah, I'll leave it at that. I'll leave it at that. But this only came about because people have been pushing for this and demanding this. This didn't just come about because somebody asked President Obama whether or not he thinks solitary confinement is wrong. Okay. Or if he supports the abolishment of solitary confinement. Hell no. You have people for many, many, many decades who have been pushing, who have been organizing, who have been putting these politicians on blast, who have been exposing the evil that's going on these prison plantations. They've been putting money behind their actions and just getting this out to the masses to change the minds of the public and whatnot. And now we got, you know, a majority of people who think it's wrong. But a lot of work went into that. The people that made this happen, even though, you know, it's not everything that they was asking for, they got something because they dealing for a position of power. Because they unified with enough people, they got enough of the masses behind this effort that the system had to give it up, man. They had to give it up. And then I'm not so sure if this wasn't, I'm going to say this though. The timing also looks suspect, because what a lot of people do not know, because I haven't heard this talked about on any of the corporate media I've looked at or read as I do research, is that you got a UN panel of people that have been visiting different U.S. cities on behalf of the United Nations, investigating racism and the human right abuses of African descendant people here in the United States. Friday night on a radio program that comes on Black Talk Radio Network called Race Treaty, Brother Onaje Muwid, who was sitting in for Brother Robin Benton, he brought on three people who gave evidence and testimony in Baltimore. They just left Baltimore submitting evidence to them that the United States government and these state governments and these local governments is practicing institutional racism and violating the human rights of African descendant people here in the United States. So I'm thinking, okay, yeah, they're going to be here for, I think, another week or so. And that's why you doing this. This is why you issuing this, because there's also international pressure on the U.S. government to end solitary confinement. So I'm thinking, you know, this is them also bowing to that pressure. So that's what I think. I could be wrong. Maybe he, because he did say that he had Attorney General Loretta Lynch looking at the old, not the use of solitary confinement. This is his own words, because I'm reading from his op-ed right now that's in the Washington Post. And he said, I directed Attorney General Loretta E. Lynch in the Justice Department to review the overuse of solitary confinement against across U.S. prisons. They found that there are circumstances when solitary is a necessary tool, such as when certain prisoners must be isolated for their own protection or in order to protect staff and other inmates. Come on. So again, see, this ain't gonna cut it, buddy. This ain't gonna cut it. They talking about the overuse of it. And then, oh, we gonna torture you to protect you. Now, where in the universe does that make logic sense? I know solitary confinement is torture, and it causes irreparable harm to you psychologically to the point that you might want to kill yourself and even hallucinate, you know, and whatnot. But we gonna allow it because we just trying to protect you. God damn. Did he just really say that? We protecting you, man, by torturing you. Come on, dude. Come on. Oh, Lord, I'm going to leave it alone, y'all. Y'all stay tuned for the 10th old radio show coming up at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern time right here on Black Talk Radio Network. Brother Dave, what will you be talking about today? Brother Dave will be talking about stopping this war that's being waged against you. All right, how to win the battle is what he's talking about. So, Brother Dave's coming up at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. Make sure that you tune right back in, or y'all can keep it locked. Y'all know when we're not on air live streaming, there is some auto DJ is serving up content to you. So y'all just stay tuned. Brother Dave will be on air here in just about 27 minutes. I might even kick some message music in the meantime. But listen, what's today? Tuesday. I will be back on air on New Abolitionist Radio, where we can really talk about, we'll probably be talking about Ta-Nehisi Coates, man. Calling Lincoln a great abolitionist. I know Brother Max and Johanna got something to say about that, because I know they know the real truth about Lincoln now. We can't be holding this man up as no martyr for abolitionism, as a martyr to end slavery, when he is one of the primary reasons why slavery was never abolished in this country. So I know them brothers got something to say tomorrow night. That's New Abolitionist Radio. 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. Recognize the fact that we live behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. It's a battlefield out there. Casualties are being created every day. New slaves are being captured for the new slave plantation called prisons. And in order to prevent this from happening to you, there is certain behavior that you need to, I guess, let's just say, certain codes of conduct that you need to adapt behind these enemy lines, so you don't make it so easy for these people to put you into slavery, or so that you don't make it so easy for them to shoot you down in the streets, man. You got to have that battlefield awareness. It's not a 100% foolproof, you know, code of conduct that can stop anything from happening to you. You know, things can happen for a great many reasons, and it ain't cause you did anything incorrect, but just know it's people out there trying to kill you, it's people out there trying to enslave you, and so you need to do everything possible to keep that from happening. All right, with that said, peace and blessings to all.
Gentlemen, what brings me to my next point? Don't smoke crack.
I thought that it was a matter of